and you're listening to The Point of Pittsburgh. This is Nathan Ruggles here with you. Thanks so much for joining us here today. I'd like extensive thanks out to the United Steelworkers as well as the PSEA for their support for this program. So in studio, we have with us, as always, Charlie McAllister, our historian here in Pittsburgh.
Great to be here.
As well as Rosemary Trump, a former international vice president at SEIU.
And it's always a pleasure. Thank you, Nathan.
Well, so we, I know, have a number of things, as always, news here in Pittsburgh to look at. And Charlie, I know that we have, Pittsburgh's been burdened with certain
oversight.
Regime oversight for some time. Talk about this. This is news to me.
So. Yeah, right. You're a newcomer here. And this has kind of faded to some degree because it's been absolutely totally unnecessary in recent times. And then there's been also accusations of corruption about the board itself or whatever the board has even left. But finally, Peduto has requested that the state end it. The state legislature set this up. This is when Pittsburgh was in a deep financial crisis after, of course, the collapse of all the industries.
And the 70s or 80s or something?
Really the 90s is when the municipal crisis really hit. And the state legislature actually set up two different oversight boards like they did. We were a pioneer in this, like Detroit, you know, had the...
Not necessarily something you would be a pioneer
in. No, yeah. The governor was stepped in Detroit and put them under, you know, the rule of the Republicans from outside the city.
It led to the lead crisis there.
You know, right.
Directly.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. So what we had Act 47, and the real purpose of it was to assert the control of the legislature over city council in the city of Pittsburgh. And it was to block a talk which had been agitating for years, Jimmy Furlow in the lead and many others, about a commuter tax. The city of Philadelphia has the right to charge a 1% tax for people who come in from outside the city to work. Two-thirds of the people in the city of Pittsburgh don't live in the city of Pittsburgh. And all they paid was what they called an occupation tax. It used to be $10. They raised it to $100. But it's the worst kind of tax.
If you work in the city,
you pay. The only thing Jeffrey Romoff, multi-millionaire head of UPMC, pays is $100 flat tax. This is the worst. This is not a flat tax in percent. This is a flat dollar amount. So the poor person coming over our border to work as a janitor pays $100, and the richest people coming into the city of Pittsburgh pay $100.
So no other income tax.
There's no income tax allowed on people coming from outside, which has been a thorn in the side of the city. Here we're going bankrupt. We provide fire services. We pave the roads, we provide...
To get you to work, right?
Right, all these things. And our public transportation has been squeezed all during this period, cutback after another.
Because the inability to tax people that work here.
Particularly the wealthier folk who work here and some sort of a fair means. At any rate, and it was this discipline on these undisciplined Democrats who, you know, spend and want to tax was imposed by the legislature to control this. And I remember the meeting, big meeting we had with David Roderick and all kinds of speakers, Mayor Murphy, and I got up near I wasn't able to speak till after 11. Unfortunately, there's a long line of people fighting to get up to the...
No, this was back...
Oh, this has got to be 14, 15 years ago when this was imposed. And what it... I had urged, in fact, I'd heard from Homestead people that they had a public services tax, which they had imposed for fire, police, roads, etc. So I raised this idea at the thing, and this lawyer came running over to me, said, "What was this public service thing?" And I didn't know he was a lawyer. I didn't know who he was. And he was very nervous about it. And very shortly after, they changed the name of the occupation tax to the public services tax so they could avoid charging out-of-towners this thing. I mean, I had a bad role here by asking the wrong question, by urging them to do what some of the boroughs were doing in the Mon Valley of asserting a public services tax. They changed that name of the occupation tax to that. That was rammed through very quickly, and people didn't understand what that exactly meant. At any rate, we've had anti-democratic restrictions on our city government by the Republican-dominated legislature, and it's time to get rid of it. And
Peduto is requesting.
And he's requesting it, and this should open the door for a discussion about a more equitable tax system, which deals with the huge nonprofits that we have that are incredibly wealthy, and we have more nonprofit-owned land in Pittsburgh than any other city in the country, and we have no way of taxing two-thirds of the people who work in the city. So it's the entire weight of the city is on the homeowners.
And you contrast this with Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, which has a right. They made a thing a long time ago so they could play games with Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. There's a Class 1 or Class A city, and then there's a Class 2 city, and then the rest are all threes. And the 1 is Philly, the 2 is Pittsburgh, and everybody else is 3. That allows them to say only Class 1 cities can do this or whatever. They can, and that's how they blocked any tax of suburbanites for the city of Pittsburgh. And it's ongoing problem.
And this is the main issue that this has been imposed on the city, is this issue of this tax.
Well, it seems to me that we should start reopening the whole issue of fair taxation again.
Absolutely.
Once Act 47 is removed. They have no real excuse for it. The city's finances are back in order. They need to get rid of it.
Well, I agree with Charlie on that. And, that, you know, and frankly, now that we're discovering that another benefit that outsiders get as a benefit, free benefit, is the water they use when they're here in Pittsburgh working in these buildings, you know. I mean, everything from their drinking water to, going to the bathroom, washing their hands, going to the restaurants, whatever.
Or if their business is a water use intensive business, they're obviously benefiting.
Exactly.
From that
as well. So here's the most recent discovery to me was learning that the city services are not billed by the public water system. In other words, they get free water from the water system. Meantime, all the infrastructure has to be repaired. And who's paying it for it but the homeowner? Not, you know, and so...
In Pittsburgh. Yes.
In other words, like the zoo, watering all those animals and so forth, that's all free, supplied by the water system. So what I'm saying is the city should not pay for that water necessarily, but there should be some sort of a regional tax or a state tax or a multi-county tax to help the city of Pittsburgh pay for all the infrastructure repair that is going to have to take place. And the burden should just not be on the city residents when so much of the city is using hundreds of millions of gallons of water and infrastructure lines that are going to be repaired at the homeowner's expense, because this really should be a shared expense.
Absolutely.
By the whole community, because people from all over Pennsylvania, and particularly in the suburban counties, come to Pittsburgh to use the zoo as well as the
parks and museums,
Boyce Park,
the
you
list
know, to
is
go skate.
Forever long,
exactly.
Yes. Well, and you know, so we have two issues here with the issue of just basic fairness, is that
right.
if you benefit from a service or something, you should pay something for
right.
it.
Right.
A fair
a good
tax
Republican
for
value.
And but a fair, you know, progressive, you know,
sure.
And then in democratic control, that a municipality, a city should have control over how it pays for things,
sure.
And how it in the rules around that. We can come back to this along with other issues. There are many here, of course, in the city of Pittsburgh. Here in a moment, we do need to take a break. I have in studio with me Charlie McAllister and Rosemary Trump. This is Nathan Ruggles here with The Point of Pittsburgh. We'll be right back.
If you've ever been to one of the cities graced with a Trump hotel, casino, resort, etc., You know that the Donald splashes his name in giant, gaudy letters across every structure he owns, preferably in gold. Now, he's taken ownership of a massive new structure, and he might not want his name on this one. It's Trump's towering redo of America's tax law, and it's truly golden, for the super rich, that is, revealing in hard numbers whom his presidency really serves, not just the 1%, but the 1/10 of 1%ers who are multimillionaires, like, guess who? Him. First and foremost, the Trump tax plan slashes the payments that giant corporations make to support our nation. He claims that this will let corporate elites raise the wages of workers and create jobs, winking at the fact that, of course, the elites will pocket every dime of his tax giveaways. And shh, don't mention a little secret gotcha. A third of his corporate benefits go to foreign owners of American corporations. Meanwhile, Trump's luxurious new tax structure eliminates many benefits for middle-class families, such as tax deductions for medical expenses, college tuition, and interest paid on student loans. He wants modest-income families to pay more, so he can eliminate current taxes on his own uber-rich family, including killing the alternative income tax paid by the rich and the estate tax, which applies only to the immense fortunes of a handful of America's richest families. This is Jim Hightower saying, did I mention that the gilded tax structure proposed by this self-described business genius would hang an additional $1.5 trillion debt around our children's necks? No surprise, for Trump's grandiose luxury projects were often built with other people's money, advancing himself before he slipped away, leaving others to grapple with the bankruptcy.
While college and university tuitions go up and up, higher education administrators have been spending less on students' education. Today, only a quarter of higher ed faculty has secure full-time jobs. The rest are so-called adjunct faculty, hired on a per-course temporary basis, often with no benefits, and are paid just $2,700 on average per course. Dedicated adjunct faculty across the country are joining together and fighting back in defense of their students' future. In Pittsburgh, they have formed the Adjunct Faculty Association, affiliated with United Steelworkers Union. Adjuncts and students all over the city are joining the AFA to achieve the goal of providing high-quality, affordable higher education. To know more or to support Pittsburgh's adjunct faculty, give us a call at 412-562-6967 or find us on the web at usw.org. Again, that's 412-562-6967 or usw.org. Together, we can take higher education back.
Is that a faucet running?
That's not a faucet. That's a river rushing through the forest. Forest rivers provide over 100 million people with clean water to drink.
What? I can't hear you because of the vacuum.
That's not a vacuum. That's the trees in the forest cleaning up the air we breathe.
I didn't know the trees were so amazing.
Yep, and the forest gives us shade, trees to climb.
That's awesome. Let's go explore some more.
Visit the forest today and enjoy all it does just for you. To learn more about the forest and find one near you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hey everyone, let's all stop what we're doing and take a moment. You see? Every moment can be kind of special. But they can be loud moments, goofy moments, dorky moments, it doesn't matter. Because every time dads like us take a moment like that to spend with our kids, well, it's pretty momentous. So let's take a moment to make a moment. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And welcome back. This is The Point of Pittsburgh. This is Nathan Ruggles here with you. Thanks so much for staying with us here on the program. I'd like to extend some thanks out to the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO as well as the IBEW Local 5 for supporting this program. So we have in studio with us Charlie McCullister, a historian here in Pittsburgh. Charlie.
Great to be here.
As well as Rosemary Trump.
Good to be here.
Now, Rosemary, we were talking with the labor intensive about the issue of artificial intelligence and robotics.
Right.
Well, there's right here in Pittsburgh.
We are at the seat of that innovation. I mean, what with Carnegie Mellon and the University of Pittsburgh and our other universities here, much of it is, much of our fame in academia is the development of robotics and artificial intelligence, and that's why we're able to compete with Silicon Valley.
Particularly with Carnegie Mellon.
Oh, absolutely. And so in any event, as a result of all that academia effort, we now have, as a result of Councilman Dan Gilman, who accidentally had a college roommate that evidently has contact with a major electronics firm called LG. Most of us know LG either by owning one of their television sets or appliances or cell phones or other electronic equipment. And they're based in South Korea. This major corporation is based in South Korea. Their headquarters is there. In any event, they're in the process of looking at getting even more involved in automobile information and entertainment systems that are going to be a part of all of these self-operating cars and so forth. So Councilman Gelman, to his credit, invited a major delegation. And this week, this very week, we have some 40 members of the LG headquarters that are either executives or high technical development people coming to meet with the academia people at Carnegie Mellon University. They're going to be meeting with a large number of them, and they're also going to be have been invited to meet with other manufacturers. And the hope, of course, would be that they'd want to set up a headquarters here in Pittsburgh and continue to develop their products and find ways in which to install their products into American-made goods. And that's all well to the good. My only issue is that, you know, I would hope that Mr. Gelman also suggests that they meet with the IBEW, Local 5 folks, that have a beautiful and phenomenal training center for people who deal in the electronics industry, and that find a way in which to use, you know, if they do not now have people that could assist them in training potential employees should they come here, IBEW 5 would probably find a way to work with them to get that expertise in order to train those employees on their behalf. And that should be the goal, is that when this company comes to Pittsburgh, they're trained by union trainers and supervisors and teachers, and that they the company will expect them to hire these union workers and pay them a union wage and a union health benefit and a union pension. And that should just be ongoing. I mean, we in the Democratic Party shouldn't just want business for business sake. We should want business that's going to create those life-sustaining jobs and payrolls and benefits that we need. And they should understand to come to Pittsburgh, yes, they're going to get all this technology and ideas from, you know, our major universities, but they're also going to be expected when they come here to be a responsible corporate citizen by paying decent wages and benefits to the workers, and that that training and education from a technical standpoint is another asset that we have to, as a deliverable to them when they come here.
Well, absolutely. And too, especially if, as you know, we were talking about Amazon a couple weeks ago, looking at Pittsburgh, right? If they're going to roll out the red carpet and offer all kinds of benefits and funding or grants or
incentives,
tax savings, what have you, if tax dollars from people here in Pittsburgh are going to go to this big corporation, incentivize them to come, then it is totally reasonable, right, to expect that they should benefit in terms of jobs, not just any job, but good jobs,
right?
And jobs for people who live here and not just for people coming from elsewhere to take those jobs, right?
Precisely. that it should be a win-win for everyone.
That's right.
That it should be a win for the corporation, a win for the community and the tax system, but it should be also a win for the workers who go to work for that enterprise. And that way it can be a seamless system. I mean, one of the major complaints that corporations have is finding trained personnel. Well, if we help our apprentice programs grow and we help the jobs grow and be able to attract young people into those occupations because we are able to offer them secure employment with decent wages and benefits, then it's a win-win for everyone. The whole economy succeeds as a result of that effort.
And what do you see as, what's the track record here in Pittsburgh for similar situations?
I think the track record is that on the building trade side, it's excellent. That, you know, that when, if there's going to be a company that wants to actually do bricks and mortar, that the political enterprise does in fact introduce them to the building trades, and it works out
that
it's built union,
so to speak,
right? And that it's built union. But now we've got to do that for the manufacturing and the service end of those companies as well. That it's just not getting you up and running and built, but it's operating on a day-to-day basis. I mean, we need to have living wage jobs at the building site, and we need living wage jobs once it's in the process of being manufactured and serviced.
Once that building is finished, the people working inside it.
Exactly.
Have this as well, right?
Need to have the same kind of protections as the workers are built.
Well, that seems perfectly reasonable to me. Now, the question is it going to happen, and how's it going to happen? I guess is the big
question. I think that's why we're here, is that we throw these ideas out and hope they take root, that unions and the politicians and the corporate heads says, you know, maybe that's an idea that we should look at and examine and see if we can make it possible. But that would be my hope, is that that it's a suggestion that has an opportunity to grow. And I think, you know, thank you for the service that you provide here to be able to have this discussion among ourselves. And, you know, and frankly, you know, if there's some union out there that says, you know, I want to explore it more or tell you why you're wrong, Rosemary, that's fine. I'd be happy to meet with them, and perhaps they'll even come on the Union Edge and have a different point of view. Absolutely.
Charlie, did you have a final thought here for us?
This is a revolutionary but a very important idea, that we have to connect the producers or manufacturers like LG, CMUs. That's why they're coming here, obviously, because there's a pool of very highly trained, skilled scientist engineers, but with the practical side, the people who know how to install it, who are going to build the buildings in which those things are going to operate, that's the missing piece that really needs to be connected to organizations of workers plugged into technological change from the beginning.
Very good. Very good. Well, that'll have to do it here for us on The Point in Pittsburgh. Thank you, Charlie McAllister.
Great to be here.
And thank you, Rosemary Trump.
It's always a pleasure.
For being here with us. This is Nathan Ruggles. Thanks for joining us here today.